sir.
Now, from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 3 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. Tiger Woods underwent a long surgical procedure yesterday to rebuild his injured right leg. He suffered open fractures to both the upper and lower portion of his tibia and fibula. A rod was inserted to stabilize the leg. Multiple screws and pins were inserted for stability for the ankle and foot. The Dogs absolutely humiliated last night in Tempe. 97-64, Remy Martin led the way. 26 points for the Sun Devils. Marcus Sahonis had 16 for the Dogs. How about this? ASU went on a 36-5 run over a 12-minute span. Late first, early second to put the game away. Two teams face off again tomorrow, so we got that going for us, which is nice. Nets guard James Harden and Suns guard Chris Paul lead the list of 14 players selected by the NBA's head coaches as reserves for the 2021 NBA All-Star Game. The ninth selection for Harden, 11th for Paul. And former Bothell High star Zach LaVine received his first selection. Let's get started with JB.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softy and Dick.
Softy and Dick without the soft one this week, but we have had co-hosts from the stars, man. We're talking Tony Softly for a couple of days, and who's this guy that kind of sort of looks like Jerry Brewer over here? I can't quite make it out. I'm driving in. Jerry texts me. He says, I'm here. I'm saying, hey, hang on. I'm pulling in. So I pull in. I see one guy with a mask and a hat on, a Cubs hat and a mask on, standing outside. But that's not Jerry. So I'm like, I was about ready to call him. Like, where's Jerry? And then he kind of waves at the guy, kind of waves at me. And I'm like, oh, that's Jerry. Down how many pounds, Jerry?
132.
Holy smokes.
0.2.
Unbelievable. And was this, I mean, congratulations. That's amazing. You look fabulous. You look like you're in your 20s. Like, what was the main reasoning behind it? Everybody's got that trigger that says, decides, now's the time and this is why I'm going to do it.
Divisional round of the playoffs last year. Minnesota Vikings at Santa Clara 49ers. Okay. I was walking into the stadium there, Levi's Stadium, and had a fainting spell.
Ooh.
Turned out it was some kind of just unexplained vertigo. Couldn't cover the game. Went through, came back here, had a whole battery of tests. Nothing came up other than, hey, man, you just something made you dizzy. But then, like, that day I decided, look, I am going to be intentional about everything. I'm 42 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not as young as I used to be. I'm just going to take care of myself better. And that was the impetus for it all. And, you know, when I did the test and everything, it was like, you're in really good shape, but you need to lose some damn weight.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically it. Like, yeah. I mean, that's really the only thing that's holding you back. And I remember the doctor kind of put it to me in a way that made me think, you know, your body wants to be a great team, but you're holding it back.
Gotcha.
And that's, to know how resilient I had been, despite the fact that I hadn't watched calories, hadn't watched sugar, carbs, all of that stuff. I was like, well, what could I do if I actually paid attention to these things?
Sure.
And I actually took care of myself? And here we are more than a year later, and it's 132 pounds down, and I feel great. I mean, I do feel like I am 20 years younger than I was.
Congratulations, so, man.
Yeah, it's more than anything, it's just great just being able to play out in the yard with my kids, shoot basketball at home, take walks, go on hikes, and not be the one who's trudging along, you know, saying, wait up.
Well, and really, in reality, you did take 20 years, you know, because you're probably going to last 20 more years than you probably would have before, right? I mean, that's the hope.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it was I was probably felt like I was in my 60s. You don't realize that at the time because you're just like,
This is what 40s feels like.
Oh,
right?
I'm getting old. Like, oh, you wake up in the morning and just something aches for no reason. It's like, no, some of that is part of aging, but it ain't all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for me, I do feel like I'm a little younger than my age now, which feels great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, congratulations. And speaking of aging, I aged, and I was talking to Ian about this 10 minutes ago or so on Crosstalk. I aged a good 10 years watching Husky basketball last night. And it was one of those things. I made a conscious decision. It was just like one of those nights, you know, when the family's doing something. My wife had late work. She works from home, but she was on Zoom calls until like 7:30, 8 o'clock last night. My son was at basketball training, so my daughter was watching some pre-teeny bopper movie in the other room, and so I was like, nobody needs me right now. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to crack open a beer, and I'm going to watch Husky basketball and see what it looked like. Because, I mean, I've watched it this year, obviously, but I don't know if I've watched a game, maybe one game with my dad, the Cougar game, from beginning to end, and I gotta diagnose what's going on, man. And oh my gosh, it was unbelievable the sloppiness that I saw. And that was the thing that really discouraged me the most, because I'm not looking for reasons to denigrate this team. I'm a Husky fan. I'm not looking for reasons to kill the coaching staff, to kill the players. On the contrary, I am the snow globe, man. I'm looking for give me reasons that I can go on the air and say, you know, this is getting better. This is getting better. They did much better. And yet with this basketball team this year, we've seen some of those games where you can say, hey, look, there's a trend. Their defense is getting better for two or three games in a row. And then you see that. And it's staggering and it's disheartening, man. It really, really is.
Yeah, I see a team that's overmatched. I think they're especially up front. Their front court is a disaster, and I think everything breaks down as a result of that. We thought, looking at some of the names and some of the accomplishments of some of the guys in the backcourt, that maybe the backcourt could sustain them, but it's mm-hmm. not been good either. I mean, there's been some good individual moments from certain guys, but all in all, they're a team that there's a talent deficit, which it comes back to the coaching from the standpoint of you're the ones who are in charge of the recruiting.
You're the one procuring the players.
I think that's their biggest problem, is that they have made mistakes in recruiting, that they haven't been able to make some connections in terms of recruiting. They haven't been able to pair, you know, the one and dones. You know, he had two of them last year, mm-hmm. Stewart and McDaniels, with guys. If you're going to go after the one and dones, that's fine. You got to have a great plan for how you're going to replace them after a year. So there has to be underneath that, you have to be really great, almost flawless, in getting the guys who might stay for 3 years or 4 years, or even guys who are going to stay for five because they're going to redshirt a year. But what you're projecting them to be, they absolutely have to be nails in terms of becoming that.
Yes.
But instead, there's just holes everywhere. And I think there's sort of a crisis of identity in terms of, you know, do you want to continue to do the Jim Boeheim thing, or do you want to do your own thing? There's a lot of issues there. And it's one thing to look at it and say 5-18 and 4-14 in the conference, okay, it's a bad year. But beyond that, when you start to look at some other things, I think there are things that we can look at in recruiting and in terms of just the level of interest in, say, the next two or three classes. You know, how much passion there is to be able to get monster classes together. That's not coming together. And that's like the greater concern, is not that they fell into a hole. I mean, this year stinks.
Sure.
But it's how do you get out of the hole? And I think that there's a bigger hole there than what we're currently seeing on the floor. So how do you get better? You can't just get better just off of player development. Like, you got to get some players with a capital P in here. And we know we got one coming in. and Jackson Grant. But beyond that, who are you going to pair him with? I mean, that's the greatest concern. And what I mean, and they still have some guys who have some length left to their career. And are they going to get better, or are they just guys who are, you know, okay, well, it'll be great that next year he'll be a junior, or next year he'll be a senior, but he's not any good.
And see, that's the key for me. I'm not as big in basketball as I am in football, getting those star guys. I mean, obviously it's nice, but we've seen the teams that have won national championships. Virginia, Tony Bennett, Villanova, Jay Wright. These teams that make big runs in the NCAA tournament, a lot of times, it's just a bunch of three-star dudes that know they're three-star dudes, that know they're not going to be first-round draft picks in the NBA. But you know what? I'm committed. I'm bought into this program. I'm going to stay here for 4 years. I'm going to learn this system like the back of my hand. And that's what Washington could be, even with guys like Marcus Sahonis and Nate Pryor and Riley Sorn and Nate. I mean, even with just this those level of guys, and you're right, those that level of guys is nowhere close to elite. But that's all I was looking for from this year is, can I look, and now it's hard during COVID, obviously, and with the practice schedule's been wonky, the game schedule's been wonky. I mean, heck, they're playing the same team in the same venue two games in a row, 3 days apart. I mean, it's just like, it's crazy this year. So I understand that, and that's why I'm willing to give them a little bit of a pass this year. But give me something, Hop. Give me something that where I look at this basketball team in December, and then look at this basketball team in late February and say, oh, okay, that defense looks much tighter now. That you have an offensive system now. The sloppiness is gone. Okay, you're not great basketball players. That's okay. How's the system working? And that's what my biggest problem is. The system isn't getting these guys better right now.
Yeah, and that's why I think they're overmatched. I think they stepped into something that they don't know how to get themselves out of.
Yeah.
And it's their problem. You know, once again, with coaches, and thank God Hop isn't this guy. I mean, some coaches, I mean, Jerry Stackhouse kind of stepped in it at Vanderbilt, talking about how his guys aren't this and aren't that. Well, guess what? You're the one who recruited them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the one who inherited some of those guys, and you could have remixed your roster. So roster management is 70% of it in college basketball, college football, all college sports. And how you coach them is the other 30%, I think. And they've got problems on both fronts. But I think a lot of this is just that the way they're doing things and the guys that they have, they're asking them to do things that they can't do, and they haven't been able to adjust.
That's Jerry Brewer joining us today. We're going to talk a little football. I had a chance to catch up with Mike Florio, our weekly conversation from Pro Football Talk, coming up next. Petros at 4:20. We'll hear a little of the Jerry DePoto interview with Chuck and Buck this morning. That'll be at 5:20 today. And Everett Fitzhugh at 5:45. The voice of the Kraken. Softy and Dick without the soft one on 950K.
It's time for our weekly conversation with Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Tired of buying and repping the same old Seattle sports gear everyone else has? For the best Storm, Seahawks, Mariners, Kraken, Rainiers, Sounders, and not to mention the largest Sonics collection in the world, check out SimplySeattle.com. Now with Mike Florio, here's Softy and Dick.
And welcome back, Sports Radio 950 KJR, Softy and Dick. Without the soft one this week, Jerry Brewer will rejoin us coming up in the next segment. But now, as always, at this time on a Wednesday, we talk to our friend from PFT, Mike Florio. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. And, you know, this Russell Wilson thing never seems to go away. And, you know, I guess the question that has been asked over the last 24, 48 hours, I've heard it asked multiple places, is, would a third of the NFL call John Schneider if Russell Wilson wasn't available? How would you answer that question?
Yes, because there's no harm in calling. There's no harm in hearing it straight from the team. There's no harm in making an offer, even if the Seahawks hang up the phone or ultimately just don't respond. And, you know, I haven't seen a report that the teams that are calling are being told, go away, you're wasting our time, why are you doing this, we have better things to do than talk to people who want to discuss subjects that that have no relevance to us. So, yeah, I think that even if they haven't come out and said they want to trade him, it does make sense for teams to call. Teams are calling the Texans. You know, the difference is between the Texans and the Seahawks, the Texans are making it known that they're not interested in trading Deshaun Watson. Whether they are or not, they're making it known that they're not. The Seahawks aren't saying anything, which I think is kind of strange. And the longer this goes, the weirder it is that they aren't saying anything.
Well, and yeah, and I've heard that from other people, even as to far as criticizing the Hawks for not squashing the rumors. But I'm wondering, I mean, are the Hawks really supposed to hold a press conference during the off season, kissing Russell Wilson's butt and throwing roses at him and saying we love him and we're not trading him? I mean, that just
You don't have to do that. But there's a way to make it known to people in the media that they're not trading him. They haven't even tried to do that. You know, they call a reporter, local or national, mm-hmm. and make it known that way. And they just didn't do it, period. And they haven't done it. Now, whether or not they will do it, different question. But they haven't, and the longer it goes that they haven't, the more conspicuous it gets.
Is it smart for them not to do that? Just because, hey, maybe they do end up getting an offer that they can't refuse. Why not keep the door open?
Well, yeah, I think you sit back and you just wait and see how it plays out. And when a team calls and makes an offer, if you don't respond, maybe they call back with a better offer. And I think as we get closer to March 17th when the market opens, teams that are looking at other options at quarterback, they may decide to put their best offer on the table before they move on to whatever their other option is. If Russell Wilson is plan A, let's go ahead and make our best offer so we can move on to plan B with a clean conscience. So I think that's a possibility as well. But, hey, look, every player in the NFL, except a small handful, every player is available to be traded for the right price. And I think Russell Wilson is on that list of guys who are available to be traded. The question is, will someone put the right price in front of the Seahawks, and what will they do? And the other question I have, and I know that this question is pertinent in league circles, who makes the decision? Who calls the shots? Who has the up or down authority, the true authority, to either accept or reject an offer? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if it's Jody Allen, if it's Pete Carroll, if it's somebody else. I just don't know, and I think people around the league don't know either.
Is this a Mark Rogers, I'm ticked at the Hawks thing, or is this truly a Russell Wilson thing? Because they could be two different things, right? You could have the agent be more pissed off at the franchise than the actual player is.
Well, that's possible, but unless Mark Rogers is one hell of a ventriloquist, I mean, it was Russell Wilson who spoke, right? He's the one who spoke publicly, yeah. and made it known that there are things he doesn't like and actually, you know, crossed the line, as some would say. And we've talked about this earlier, the idea that he threw teammates under the bus, complaining about blocking. It's just so strange for a quarterback to do this, and I don't think the quarterback does it if the agent is the one who's upset. The client is the one who calls the shots, and I think that at the end of the day, this all originates from Russell Wilson, and I don't think this is something that just popped up when he was sitting at the Super Bowl looking miserable, caught between his wife and the commissioner as Tom Brady was down on the field winning number 7. I think this is something that's been a while in the making, and the question is, does it come to a head now, or does it come to a head next year? I think that it's coming to a head at some point. And if it's going to come to a head next year, then there's a reason, I think, if you are the Seahawks, to see what you can get now.
Absolutely.
Maybe you get more now than you would next year.
I think that's fair, no question about it. We heard from another Seahawks star this week. We heard from KJ Wright saying he's not going to take the hometown discount. What's the market going to be? KJ's such an interesting case because the guy seems to get better with age, which is not normally what we see in the NFL.
Yeah, and anytime a guy says he's not going to give the hometown discount, that means that unless he gets franchise tagged, and I'd be shocked if that happens,
right,
he's going to see what's out there, and maybe he'll leave. And, you know, every player at some point reaches that level where they need to be thinking about how much money they're going to make, how many years they have left, and let's make as much and save as much, because the earning capacity isn't going to be there once the career ends. And, you know, I don't know what anyone's value is right now, because I don't know what teams are going to do as it relates to the salary cap. I don't know how much of an early rush to sign guys for big money is going to happen this year.
Right.
I think the big money's not going to be there like it normally is. Teams are going to wait for a while and see what bargains are out there. And that's part of this too. You can't really set your board at free agency and identify your targets until you know who all's out there. And right up until March 17, when everyone has to be in compliance with the new cap, there's a possibility guys are going to be available that you didn't realize were going to be available.
Yeah.
And that becomes a factor then. You got to look at those guys and you have to evaluate those guys. You know, that's like with J.J. Watt. Even if you have an idea what the salary cap's going to be, and we're starting to get some clarity, even then, you don't know who else is going to be available. And the worst thing you could do is invest in one guy and then another guy that you really would have been interested in is available.
Well, another guy I'm torn on is Chris Carson, because this appears to be an offseason where the supply is going to outweigh the demand, which should bring the price down for guys like Chris Carson. But I also look at that list, and other than Aaron Jones, I don't see a better running back out there than Chris Carson. So, I'm hearing, you know, a tag at 8.5 for Chris Carson and maybe a two-year contract, or maybe you just let him go to free agency and you pick up somebody almost as good as Chris Carson for pennies on the dollar.
This is not a criticism of Chris Carson. This is just a reality of the position. If you can't stay healthy, you don't have the value.
Yeah.
Too many injuries at a position where you're regularly in these car crash type incidents, these hits where you're getting pretzeled up, and can you keep going? Sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. And the guys who are durable, the guys who, for whatever reason, whether it's because of the way their bodies are constituted, or they just instinctively know how to position themselves in a way where they don't get injured when they get hit, but just too many injuries, that's the problem. And that's where the challenge is, to take the name off the back of the jersey and make an assessment of the player. And I think that players can be found in any round of the draft, or not even in the draft. Wasn't Carson a seventh rounder or close to it?
Yes.
James Robinson undrafted last year by the Jaguars, yep. And he was awesome. So I think that's always the preference. You know, with these running backs, sometimes teams get pushed into signing them to a big contract because the fans fall in love with them. They become superstars, and for reasons unrelated to football. Sean Alexander, I think, was one of the first big examples of that. After he was the league MVP in 2005, Seahawks go to the Super Bowl. He's due for a new contract. They pay him a bunch of money, and within a year, they regret it.
Right.
Sometimes there is that regret right away, and sometimes there isn't, but, you know, you only do that for a superstar. I think for Chris Carson, you just don't do it, and you move on to somebody else, and you hope you can get someone who isn't going to be regularly banged up and unavailable to play. And I mean, to say, you know, they've been through that issue with him. It seems like they've been through it with a lot of running backs, and maybe it's just a matter of dumb luck, but at some point, unless you've got substandard training and flexibility and nutrition programs, at some point you're just going to get lucky and get a guy who is going to be a guy who stays healthy. And I think it's better to swing the axe in that direction than it is to just hope that things are suddenly going to improve with Chris Carson.
You know, it seems like a month since Carson Wentz was traded, but it was only 6 days ago, so we didn't even get a chance to talk to you last Wednesday about it. So was this as close to a win-win as you can get, or do you really feel like one side got the better of the other?
No, I think it was a win-win because the Colts desperately needed a quarterback, and the Colts have that institutional knowledge of Carson Wentz by virtue of Frank Reich's time with the Eagles as offensive coordinator, and the Eagles needed to unload a bad contract. This is a Jared Goff, Brock Osweiler type of a contract, and the fact that the Eagles got anything positive flowing in their direction while escaping a bad contract is huge for them. Yeah, it's only a third-round pick and a second-round pick that can become a first-rounder, and when we see that the Lions got two ones and a and a, what was it? 2-1s plus, 2-1s and a 3? It was 2-1s and a 3 for Matthew Stafford. You know, but that's misleading because part of that haul was to take on the Jared Goff contract.
Right.
And so the fact that the Eagles got something is huge, and the fact that the Colts answered their quarterback question with Phillip Rivers retiring, huge for them. I think it worked out well, and now we see whether or not it was an aberration last year for Carson Wentz when he performed so poorly after having really three straight solid seasons.
Final couple minutes with Mike Florio, PFT, brought to you by our friends at Simply Seattle. And Jamie has done it again. Jamie Munson's put out a new free Jared rally tee. We got to get Jared Kelenic up on the major league roster. So for just $5.99, you can buy your free Jared rally tee, and also your $5.99 will donate $1 to a charity of Jared Kelenic's choice. So very cool idea. He's always very creative there at Simply Seattle. I mean, we don't have time to talk about all these quarterbacks and restructurings in the news. So let's just go to Dak because he's the quarterback in his prime. Franchise or long term deal in his future?
I think you have to do a long-term deal if you're the Cowboys for one very important reason. $37.68 million franchise tag number, a 20% raise over his number last year, and he was given the exclusive tag last year. That shows what the Cowboys think of him. And if you don't do a long-term deal, the other side of it is once you apply that tag, you are ticking toward next year when he walks away, because a third franchise tag involves a 44% bump, $54.25 million franchise tender. They're not going to do it next year. He's hitting the market next year. And I was talking about this earlier in the day on Dan Patrick's show. People are confused about what Dak Prescott's market value is. Well, the reason they're confused is the Cowboys consistently have kept him from hitting the market. That's what the franchise tag is. It's a device that allows teams to keep players from determining their market value. So we don't know Dak's market value because the Cowboys have decided to pay a premium, and it's a significant premium, in order to keep that from happening. So it's on them, and if they can't work out a long-term deal, then they're going to have a hell of a mess next year, because I think if they don't get a long-term deal by July 15, which is the deadline for doing it, and I think that they should try to get the long-term deal before they even use the tag a second time. But if they can't get that long-term deal, there's a good chance it's going to be Dak's last year with the Cowboys.
When you were on the Patrick Show today, did you talk about your lack of protection at PFT like Russell?
I there's no one to trade me to. That's the problem. See, I'm more like the quarterback whose team would love to trade him, but they can't find any takers.
Gotcha.
So I just keep my mouth shut and keep going.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you.
Mike Florio, brought to you by our friends at Simply Seattle. Don't forget the free Jared t-shirt. It's not a free t-shirt, but it's basically free. It's only $5.99. Free Jared Kelenic t-shirt from our friends at Simply Seattle, which includes a $1 donation to the choice to the charity of Jared Kelenic's choice. Back after this, we'll bring back Jerry Brewer to the fold on 950.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for March Madness and the Final Four. Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
Softy and Dick on a Wednesday without the soft one. Our thanks as always to Mike Florio, presented by our friends at Simply Seattle. Jamie Munson's got that free Jared Kelenic shirt. I keep saying that, and people must think that I mean it's a free shirt. No, the shirt says free Jared on it, but it only costs $5.99 at simplyseattle.com, and a dollar goes to Jared Kelenic's favorite charity. But a lot there, Jerry, from Mike Florio. Jerry Brewer co-hosting today with us. So glad he is in the studio here. And, you know, starting with the Russ conversation, like I did in that segment with Mike there, should the Hawks leak something to the media like Mike suggested? I mean, certainly they're not going to call a press conference and say, oh, we love Russ, he's not going to be traded. But Mike countered my thought about that with just saying, well, hey, you know, you can leak something to anybody and get the word out there that, listen, Russell Wilson is going to be a Seahawk for 2021. Do they need to do that?
Looking at it from the Hawks' perspective, I don't think so. I mean, I think that that's already been communicated to Russell. Like, look, I mean, you're here. You're our guy. We paid you what was then a record contract. and we're really in the early stages of it, this is what it is. I don't think you have to go and they're walking a fine line, I think, between being in a partnership with a great quarterback and one of the great players in the NFL and coddling him too much. And it's not just the relationship between the Hawks and Russell Wilson. It's a locker room that you got to look out for as well. And I think Russell made it uncomfortable, and I don't think they want to make it any more comfortable publicly. And I think that's typically the way the Hawks, knowing them, knowing Pete, knowing John Schneider, that's classic how I would think they would handle this situation.
I tuned in last week on vacation. I don't even remember who you were on with, but I heard you on the air here, and you said Russ doesn't want all the smoke.
He does not.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, I think that Russ is licking his wounds a bit because he struggled like he's rarely struggled. I mean, there's only been one or two occasions other than this in which he struggled for so long. It was complicated why he struggled. Some of it was Pete philosophically. Some of it was Schottenheimer's system. And some of it was Russ's big fat ego. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were plays out on the field for him to make that were a little more simple. He didn't want to make those plays. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be the big arm quarterback who threw 40-yard passes
right to
DK Metcalf, and he wanted to throw 50 touchdowns instead of 40. And there was a lot more there that was for him, but he just didn't want to do it that way. And I think that some of this is a way to deflect criticism. He needs love. He needs love. But when I left in 2015, after you know what,
yeah,
he was trying to negotiate his first big contract.
Right.
And he needed love then. You know, he threw that pick. He needed love. He needed love. And that was a way to stir it up. I think that when you have a guy who's as good as he is, that means you have a guy who's got a tremendous ego. And sometimes that ego needs to be fed. And this is just part of it. But it will blow over if you handle things the right way. And I think,
I think,
at least for now, I mean, I look at him now and I think it's wise to look at it year to year, because you're not, you know, are you going to get to the next level? Should you sell him high as an organization? What exactly is his level of commitment? I think you do need to look at it year to year. But, I mean, I think for the next year or two, this is really just the moot point. This is just conversation.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out whether it's Russ that's really that bothered, or if it's Mark Rogers that's really that bothered. You know, the guy that, you know, you got the guy and his girlfriend, and he's like, yeah, I got a pretty good relationship going. She's cool. And you got the buddy chirping at the bar with him. Man, you can do so much better. You can do so much better. And it's almost pissing the buddy off more than it's pissing off the guy that he's in the relationship with. So, I mean, is this just Mark Rogers saying, no, you got to go out there and talk, man. They're not treating you right. They're not running the offense around you. They're not protecting you right. They're not doing it. Or you think it's really Russ that feels this way?
I think it's really Russ that feels this way. You know, knowing the dynamics of that relationship and being here for the early stages of it, and then moving, being far removed from it now, working at the Post. Mark Rogers makes his points differently than Russell is right now. And he can make those points without Russell Wilson. He has, throughout Russell Wilson's career, made those points with media members. This is Russell wanting to apply more pressure, and Russell wanting to show that he's got the clout of any other quarterback, and Russell connecting to an era in which athletes, be it Tom Brady stepping out on his own and leaving New England after 20 years, or LeBron James and everything he's done the past decade, Deshaun Watson in the moment, Aaron Rodgers and the friction that he's had with Green Bay, kind of over control. This is Russell trying to say, well, hey, I'm of that caliber. I should insinuate myself into the conversation a little more. But when I say he doesn't want that smoke, he doesn't really want to be that involved. He just wants, he wants to be the ultimate weapon of the NFL. And if he's not that, he wants everyone to know, hey, it ain't my fault we ain't quite there. I mean, that's what so much of this is about. Because, you know, that there's a level of power that he's kind of dancing towards asking at, but he really does not want to have that level of power. He just wants to be able to play at an MVP level and get back to a Super Bowl and finish the job that he couldn't that second year that they made it.
After the top of the hour headlines, I want to run by one, a poll question I threw out yesterday based upon a trade our guy Tony Softly threw out on the air yesterday, which just like threw me up against the wall. It was very interesting. We'll go over that. And then also, they've got some real decision. We can talk about whether Russell Wilson getting moved is real or not real, and I think I'm in cahoots with you. I don't think it's real. But there are real decisions that need to be made, KJ Wright. Shaq Griffin, Chris Carson. We'll talk about that next on 950 KJR.